The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker show here on channelradio.co.uk/2 in association with bizradio.co.uk on this Tuesday, the 19th of June. I'm now joined on the phone by Mr. Adam Papafilopoulos, and I hope I pronounced that right, Adam.
Yeah, good job, Paul.
Thank you very much. Adam is director of Reluctantly Brave, and he's going to be a keynote speaker at the next University of Kent Business Soundbite event. Adam, thank you so much for joining us, and you have joined us at very short notice, and I really do appreciate that. Thank you
so
much.
That's quite right. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no, it's an absolute pleasure. Why don't you kick off by telling us a bit about you and a bit about your business, which has got a fabulous name, Reluctantly Brave. I love it. I love it. So tell us a bit about you and the business.
Yeah, so I can't take credit for the name. That's my business partner, Dawood Gustav, who'd been, I think, coming up with that for many years before we started the business that I've been percolating through. So the business is a consultancy that, our aim is to transform businesses really through the dynamics of difference, of solving problems through bringing very different people, very different thinkers to bear on that challenge. Whether that's through different expertise or different life experience, but we very much believe that that's the best way to start answering business problems is not to all think the same, right? Get away from the cliches of thinking inside the box. And just do that in very, very practical ways by having people who are less likely to do that working on a given challenge.
It's interesting, that, isn't it? I was doing a food show earlier today, and I was talking to a chap who's developed a thing called chicken crackling. Okay, it's actually really nice. But the interesting thing about that, from what you were saying, is that he sat down and deliberately developed it without any experience in the food business or the fast-moving consumer business at all. And he basically came at it as a complete out-of-the-box project.
And that sounds very wise. I mean, I certainly know of some big food and drinks companies who are deliberately, when they're acquiring some of these small startup brands, deliberately keeping them at arm's length, completely separate building, not applying any of their normal corporate processes to them, because they know precisely that's going to kill it. Yeah. It's going to kill the brilliance and really restrict people. All more power to him. I hope he does well.
Absolutely. And again, that's interesting what you say. I mean, I'm knocking on a bit in years now. When I last had a proper job before I had my own business was a long time ago. Back then, there was a lot of talk. There was a chap called Tom Peters. I don't know if you come across Tom. He's a management consultant, ex-McKinsey's and all the rest of it.
Right.
And he had a thing about, back then, in the corporate world, having a thing he called skunk works.
That was Lockheed Martin originally, yeah.
Yeah, and that was a huge thing when I worked in the corporate world, of having small independent units that weren't got at by people that said, no, that'll never work around here type of thing.
Yeah, and that's exactly where we're coming from with Curiosity Cost, you see. So this is something where trying to sort of almost break that down, right? So Skunk Works is a really great example from sort of 40-odd years ago. Lockheed Martin, these guys, they go out the back. They literally go and set up in a tent out the back, I think, of one of the plants, because they weren't going to be allowed to develop the stealth fighter. It wouldn't exist if these guys hadn't risked everything, like their jobs, everything, if these guys hadn't done it. So then, you know, I'm not pretending to be sort of coming up with this great new, quite so risky adventure of them. But a lot of the stuff that I've experienced through my career before, Reluctantly Brave and working with Reluctantly Brave and lots of different clients there, is just seeing all of these different pain points that people feel that stop them from contributing to bringing new thinking forward. So Curiosity Cost for me is like, okay, so we're all human, right? Obviously. And we all basically kind of engage in, we're not lazy, but we engage in kind of a almost cost-benefit analysis of like, when I'm at work, it's not that I want an easy life, it's just that if the costs of bringing an idea forward outweigh the benefits of doing it, eventually, I'm not stupid, I'm going to give up. Right? And so if you have an organization that persistently, in really small ways, not deliberately, just little cultural things even, are constantly bringing up these pain points, these costs for people, you're really going to hamper your ability to make changes on your P&L, which is, you know, fundamentally, I guess, should be why we're all here. if I can move the dial on costs or be increasing revenue, why would I be doing things to stop that? Mm. And this is all about trying to surface, bring to light all of these different little ways that might be happening right now in businesses that, you know, people listening to this show through to Silicon Valley are seeing but not noticing.
Yeah.
And then trying to work out little ways that those can be tweaked and, you know, changing culture gradually that way so that that kind of massive intervention, like pitching a tent and risking your job out the back of the work, isn't so necessary.
Yeah, okay. I kind of get that. Are you saying that really what you're trying to do is just look at differences here from a completely detached point of view, so not kind of following where you would go? I can only think of these in terms of examples. So if you're in Silicon Valley at the moment, you know, everything right at the moment, everything's about driverless this, driverless that, AI and all the rest of it, which are obvious developments right now. Are you saying, yeah, well, that's okay, you can look at all of that, but how about, you know, I don't know, looking at fridge manufacturers or, you know, lollipop manufacturers and seeing what they're doing?
This could happen anywhere, right? So the example I give, people say make it concrete. So because I have a bit tongue-in-cheek kind of chap, my example is of a concrete company. So imagine you've got a company that's producing concrete.
Yep.
They've got 1,000 employees. They have an industrial efficiency team of, let's say, 3.
Yep.
Now, all it takes is for, instead of having 1,000 eyes on potential cost savings, which that efficiency team's looking at, all it takes is that the boss of that efficiency team, I'm sure we've all experienced something like this, gets really defensive whenever someone outside his team brings something up because maybe he feels threatened or something. And maybe that manifests in, you know, you try and bring up an idea in a meeting if you're not part of his team, and he'll be like, oh, we're already working on that. Or he'll try and belittle the idea or something.
Yeah.
Just little things that happen all the time. What happens? That other 997 people, eventually they stop noticing.
Yeah.
And they stop contributing. And this could be happening, as you say, fridge manufacturers. It could be happening anywhere.
It's interesting. It's really interesting, Adam, that you brought up that concrete manufacturers. Years and years ago, I did some consulting for a concrete company, and they were looking at exactly these things. And there was a chap there that came up with an idea. Bearing in mind, this was a long time ago. He came up with an idea, and almost everybody went, "Don't be stupid." But it actually it eventually turned into one of their biggest spenders. And what he did is he said, "Well, the problem with our product is that unless you know how to use it, you're not going to buy it." And everybody went, "Everybody knows how to use concrete."
Yeah.
And he went, "No, but they don't actually. They don't actually. Builders know how to use concrete. DIY people know how to use concrete. Ish. He said, "But what about somebody ordinary that just wants to lay a bit of a garden path?" He said, "Why don't we make a pot noodle product?" And they went, "What are you talking about?" But he eventually made it was a pot with the right mixture of sand and cement in it, and the instructions on it that said, "If you pull this piece of cardboard out and add half a gallon of water, you can lay a path with this." And and everybody poo-pooed that as an idea, but it actually became one of their biggest sellers. So, you know, that kind of off-the-wall thinking, I get exactly where you're coming from.
And it doesn't have to be sexy like driverless cars, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, most of us aren't, I would say, I mean, this is maybe how other people, I love business and I love digging into business problems anywhere, which I guess is why I'm in my job.
Yeah.
But, you know, most of us are not in sexy companies that are sort of doing this stuff that is supposedly changing the world, like driverless cars, right? But we're all doing valuable work in good companies, big and small, across the land. And we bump up across these kind of challenges every day. New products, saving costs in a factory, making sure that I have to work fewer hours in my office to get the same amount of work done so that I can then focus on business growth, you know, all of these little things. What could we do? And this is why I think, you know, the micro level is so important. It's really interesting that the doctor, I forgot his name temporarily, he's speaking with me. Dr. Sadiq Mohammed, who's speaking with me on the 11th of July, he's got a thing about why do we all listen to management consultants who turn up with one big idea that's going to solve everything?
Yep.
Like, this is, apart from agreeing that curiosity is a good thing, that we want everyone to be engaged in to help our business get better, that's the only big idea. For me, it's like, if I turn up in your business, I'm not going to tell you that X is a problem for Google and therefore it's a problem for you, or Y is a solution at Google, that's a solution at you. I just want to find three or four things that we could tweak, big change or small, that's going to actually just move the needle. How do we get 10% better? That stuff excites me.
I get that entirely. It's incremental improvements, isn't it? Just small micro changes, incremental improvements.
And if we happen to hit on something that changes the world or, you know, exponentially grows this company, brilliant.
Yeah.
But that, there are other wins as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I totally get that. Hey, this sounds like it's going to be really interesting. If you want to hear more from Adam, you can hear him. Adam is going to be one of the speakers at the Business Soundbite event run by the Kent Business School, the University of Kent, in association with the Turner Contemporary Gallery in Margate. And the event's taking place on the 11th of July. It is free to attend. And if you go into the radio website, and I'll give you the address later, you can find the link to book your place. Adam, thank you so much for joining us on the show. Just before you go, give us a shout out for your website so that people can find out more about you and more about Reluctantly Brave.
Yeah, Reluctantly Brave is, well, www.reluctantlybrave.com. I'm on LinkedIn. You can hit me up. My name, you'd be able to find me pretty easily. It sticks out a long way, Papa Philippopoulos. And I blog a bit through our website as well, so you should be able to pick me up by email or comment on something I've written and tell me I'm wrong or something. That'd be great.
Fantastic. Adam, thank you so much for joining us. We really do appreciate it. It was at very short notice, so we do thank you very much for that. And we really look forward to hearing more from you at the event on the 11th of July.
That's great. It's been a good time, Paul. Thank you.
Cheers. Have a great afternoon, Adam, and we'll see you
soon.
Cheers now. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That was Adam Papaphilippopoulos of Reluctantly Brave, and you can hear him at the Curiosity Cost Business Soundbite event on the 11th of July.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting, isn't it? I'm a great believer in innovation, but so many, you know, he's right. You can even come up with a big innovation and then people go around talking about spotting gaps in the market and all the rest of it. It's nonsense normally. Normally it just happened by accident and then you went, well, yeah, wow, that's a biggie. Cool. And off you go. I'm a big believer in evolution. Evolution by incremental random change and survival of the fittest. If it works, it keeps on working. If it doesn't, it withers on the vine. And why not? And, you know, just that kind of growth. For me, too many people stop and don't do anything. And I'll give you an example. And I'm sorry to use examples of myself, but I'm the only experience I have, really. 1,000 years ago, I started working in what was then called computers, IT as we call it now. Okay, and I had a job as a computer operator, and I very soon got bored doing that, and I learned to do something else, you know, just kind of by watching somebody. There's a chap that I worked with back then who's still in the same job, like 45 years later, and he goes, I hate my job. Well, I'm not surprised, you've been doing it a long time. Why don't you do something different? Well, the trouble is I don't know anything else. But that's because he felt safe where he was and never went outside that comfort zone to any degree. So he never learned anything else. Yeah. And I think that's where so many of us kind of fail. We don't just step outside of that comfort zone. And I don't mean in a big way. I don't mean by doing something massively stupid, you know, like chucking yourself out of a plane or climbing Mount Kilimanjaro when you don't normally walk more than 5 yards. I just mean small incremental changes that just learn something new, do something slightly different. The greatest piece of advice I was ever given as a kid, when I first started work, I worked in a paper mill. And the night shift foreman, a guy called Arthur Ellis, he was in his 60s, he said to me, listen, son, he said, first learn your own job, then learn somebody else's.
Yeah.
Yeah? And that was the most brilliant piece of advice I've ever been given, and I've lived my life like that.
But I agree with you, and I think it's a great conversation to sort of not agree as well.
Yeah.
And here's what I believe. I think change is extreme for people.
Yep.
Therefore, you have to behave extremely.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't believe that doing something tiny will create enough energy to create change. I think either it does two things. Either consistent change, so you're consistently growing, each time changing, but knowing that the outcome has to be extreme, or doing something
when you say extreme, what do you mean by that?
Okay, so again, we have to go back to ourselves, don't we?
Of course, for
self-experience.
Yeah.
So say for me with time trialing.
Yep.
Completely new. I'm going on a dual carriageway. Where people are going by on cars. I'm in pain. That's extreme.
Okay.
Okay? But to create change, to build strength, I have to do two things. Sweat. So I have to go into pain.
Yep.
And I have to do it consistently.
Yep.
And those are the two things that people don't do.
Yeah,
they aren't
sure.
consistent, and they're not prepared to go into the pain.
Yeah.
So therefore, extreme change cannot...
Yeah,
cannot come.
It's kind of the flip side of what I said.
Yeah.
Is fear. They fear the pain. They fear the having to do something different on a regular basis. Yeah, no,
you
I get
have
that.
To practice it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you have to practice it. And here's the awful thing about it: you don't know how long for.
Yeah, and you don't know if you'll ever make it.
The
thing is, you don't know whether you'll ever crack it.
Never.
Yeah, you get experienced at something and you feel comfortable with knowing how to do it. If you put yourself into a different position where you're going to learn something else, you don't know how long it's going to take.
Nope.
And you don't know if you're ever going to get there.
No.
Yeah.
And that's where the critics come in, going, you did that wrong. Oh, it's really easy. So unless you're in the arena with me, so the man in the arena, that beautiful speech, unless you're prepared to come in the arena with me and fight it out, who are you to sit there and watch me fight?
Yeah.
And that's the honesty of it.
Yeah.
So I get really passionate about this because you have to practice extreme change.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it won't come. I'll just try. It's like learning to snowboard.
Yeah.
You can't just try, you have to commit. Yeah. You have to go straight
in. It's like learning anything. It's like learning to ride a bike. You're going to fall off.
You have to commit.
And if you have stabilisers, you're going to fall off when the stabilisers come off.
Yeah, yeah.
It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
And that's how you learn. No, you're absolutely right.
Consistent failing.
Mm.
Consistently.
Good.
And then how do you deal with that emotionally?
Mm-hmm.
That's the interesting thing. Do you surround yourself with people who are your friends, who will be honest and true with you?
Yeah.
Your partner, are they honest and true with you?
Yeah. It's like anything, isn't it? I was at a wedding on Saturday and the groom is a professional sportsman. Yeah. And there was lots of talk and his teammates were there and he represents Great Britain in the Olympics and his teammates in the Olympic team were there. And it was really interesting talking to him and his friends from school. Yeah. And all of them told the same story. The trouble with him was, is that you can never get him to do this because he was always practicing that.
Mm.
And he was always smashing things and breaking things because he was rubbish at it. But he just kept going, even though he was rubbish at it, until he became Olympic standard at it. Yeah. And you could never predict that he'd ever become that standard. You can't. You just can't. You practice and practice and practice. You might never make it. Yeah.
And that's where the critic can come in and go, see, you should have stopped at this point.
And done something else. Yeah.
Or until you were successful, then you're like, oh my God, you're amazing.
Yeah.
But it's a real fine line. It's a tipping point.
And the funny thing is, though, everybody else looks at it retrospectively, don't they? They go, it's all right for you. You had the talent to start with.
Yeah.
But it didn't work like that.
No.
It really didn't work like that. You had to work really, really, really hard.
Mm.
It's like anything like that, isn't it? You know, the pinnacle of anything is the absolute pinnacle, and you'll only get there. It's like motor racing. Nigel Mansell, when he was coming up, he sold his house to buy a race car.
Yeah,
his wife took a mortgage to sell a race car. They didn't earn any money. But that could easily have ended in tears. And there are lots of people that you've never heard of that happened to that ended in tears.
Yeah.
Because he's the one you've heard of because it succeeded, you think, oh, well, everybody does that. You know, you just do that. And then eventually you make $75 million a year.
Yeah.
But you didn't hear of the hundreds and hundreds of people that did exactly the same that never made it.
No.
Because they weren't quite good enough or whatever.
Or whatever it was.
Yeah, or whatever it was that caused that.
Whatever it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. I love this debate on whether you want to deem it a success or not. Yeah. I don't know what is that, you know, but it's...
We're going to talk to Bruce in a minute as well and bring him into the conversation too and talk to Bruce about what Bruce does, because Bruce is very successful at what he does. But it's an interesting concept as well, isn't it? Is what does success mean to you? And I think people have different views on what success is too. But I also hear a lot of excuses. I hear a lot of excuses from people that go, yeah, well, you know, success isn't making money, or success isn't this, or success isn't that. And you go, yeah, it is. You're just saying that because you don't fancy doing it.
It's hard.
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah.
It's hard working late at night. It's hard getting up in the morning. It's hard. Somebody said to me, I was pitching last week in a company, and two ladies came up to me and they went, oh my God, you seem to get everything done. And, you know, what gives you the confidence? I said, you have to keep doing it.
If you want something doing, ask a busy person. You know, that those old aphorisms tend to be true. You know, people that are busy don't prevaricate. They go, just do it. Yeah, just, here we go. Get it out of the way. I haven't got time to argue about it. I'm just going to do it and get it out of the way. And you also find the flip side of that. And I find this as a business manager and owner and leader, is quite often you lack the patience to tell somebody else to do it, because you go, oh, I'll do it myself. It's easier. But rather than me tell you and then you tell me you're doing it wrong and then put it right, I'll just do it. Yeah. And you must rein yourself back from that. Otherwise, nobody else gets the opportunity to learn. But yeah.
You have to practice.
Yeah.
It's that simple.
Everything's
about practice. Call it action.
Yeah.
Call it consistent. You've got to practice and practice, and then change the mindset for it.
Yeah.
You've got to enjoy the practice.
Yeah.
You've got to enjoy failing.
Yeah.
And you train yourself to enjoy failing.
Failure is the biggest motivator there is, and everybody has to fail. I was talking about Tom Peters there, and I once spoke on a platform with Tom Peters. Nobody's heard of Tom Peters nowadays, but
who?
Tom Peters. He, back in the 80s, he wrote the first...
You didn't get my joke, did
No,
you?
I did. He wrote the first best-selling business book that went onto
the number one
New York bestsellers list, which was In Search of Excellence. And he was really big on the circuit. And I was lucky enough to speak with him on a platform at the QE2 Center. And we were speaking to a bunch of executives from IBM and places like that. And there was a bloke in the audience that kept asking, not arguing per se, but, you know, he wasn't really in tune with what he's saying. And Peters ran in on him and he said, how old are you? And he went, I'm 35. And he went, how many times have you been fired? He went, never. He went, well, you're never going to succeed, because if you haven't been fired by the time you're 35, you're just not trying hard enough.
Do you know what? It's really interesting. And this is going, and I know we're going to come back into it, but I was listening to a podcast yesterday with a very, very famous blogger, recipe book. I won't mention any names. And she said that she'd been at it for a long time before she got success.
Yeah.
She's young. Guess how long she reckons a long time is?
6 months.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's no time.
My jaw dropped to the floor.
Yeah.
6 months was a long time before she had 90,000 viewers to her blog.
Yeah.
Come and do my radio show then.
Yeah.
Do you know? And that's the honesty.
Yeah.
But her perception.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, we do live in an age where we expect instant gratification and instant feedback.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And a lot of people, I've told you my millennial joke, haven't I?
No, do it again.
A friend of mine's got a millennial daughter that's currently in her second year of university, and she's looking for some intern work experience in the summer. So if anybody needs a CEO of their company, she's available.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
So
yeah. And that's the problem. It's all this instant stuff. Anyway, do you know what I want to do now?
No.
I want to talk to our next guest, because he's been sat here patiently listening to us waffle on.
For all this
time. Yeah. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome back onto the Business Bunker Show Mr. Bruce Kidd of Operational Accounting Systems. Bruce, welcome back. It's lovely to see you again. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me again.
It's always a pleasure. For those that don't remember the last time you were on, which is quite a while ago, why don't we kick off by just giving people the background to OASIS, Operational Accounting Systems, and tell us what it is you guys do, and then we'll kind of move it from there.
No problem. In a real nutshell, I am the Sales and Marketing Director at Operational Accounting Systems Limited, which is our full name, but we call ourselves Oasis. It's easier. So Oasis is a software company, and our main aim is to help businesses to integrate their systems, all areas of the system, to basically end up in a fully integrated system to run their business.
Okay.
So it eliminates times, it eliminates errors, and it gives people more chance to look at their business and to look at data and to be able to make proactive decisions at the right time, rather ahead of time, rather than in hindsight to try
and fix things. It's interesting, isn't it? One of the things for me as a, as an angel investor, and I deal with a lot of startup businesses and early stage businesses, and most people go into business because they have some kind of technical expertise in the field that they're going into business in. So if they're going to open a garage, they know how to service a car, or if they're going to open a flower shop, they know how to put a bouquet of flowers together, or if they're going to open a web design business, they know how to design a website. What most of them don't know how to do is how to manage a business and how to run a business. And what most of them aren't interested in is how to manage a business and how to run a business, because that isn't what they're into. But the interesting thing is, and I was the same when I started my first business. I hated paperwork. I still hate paperwork. I don't like numbers. I'm not very good with numbers. But fairly early on, I learned that unless I was on top of my P&L and my balance sheet and my monthly management accounts, I didn't have a clue what was happening. And without a clue with what was happening, you had no idea whether you were succeeding, failing, doing anything, whatever. So the processes for me that I need to see at the very, very basic processes, you know, there's loads of other things you need to do. But unless I've got a handle on the finances of my company and where we are on a monthly basis, certainly no longer than that. I know people that do 6 monthly management. Okay, you can't do that. You're dead in the water by then. Yeah. You know, even a month anymore is a bit too long. I've had months where I go, oh, blimey, I had a bad month there, and I wish I'd have known that earlier. So for me, it's important that we understand those processes. So if step us through the kind of things that your products do.
Absolutely.
And is it an integrated product, or is it a suite of products that you specialize in?
Absolutely. We have we basically deal with two products to give any business out there the ability to integrate everything. So we deal with a couple of products that do that. These products we have integrated with each other. So although it might be two separate products, they still talk to each other.
Yeah,
so
sure.
You still end up having one point of entry. For example, when we think of a workforce putting timesheets on,
right,
you know, so we might have timesheets being put on via a system that filters through to another system where the people get paid in. But the system where they put the timesheets on manages other things, because that would might manage the costing of their time onto certain jobs, for example. So that would be two systems we have integrated to give the customer a one-stop experience in the software. Now, this is the software we do covers all areas of business. I've just mentioned very quickly timesheets, but that's part of the payroll side of things. But it also covers finances. It covers multi-currency functionality. It covers project management. It covers sales and help desk.
Wow.
We've got CRM in there. So we really are, when I'm looking for a manufacturing company, for example, I can give them a bit of manufacturing software that will give them MRP functionality. I can give their CRM software where they can manage their opportunities, where they can do their quoting, where they can do all their pre-work before a sale happens, before it becomes a customer.
Wow.
Integrated, following through into the customer. A process could be set up where they then go through and do all kinds of things like an online credit check, for example, linking to company sales, pulling information in from LinkedIn.
Wow.
So it will do all of that information in one system and then end up where the relevant people in the organization will see the relevant information that relates to them. But it also means that coming at the end of the month, all areas of the business is so integrated that you could potentially, and I know there's a very much a cliche in this saying, but you can press a button to produce your management accounts right at the end of the month, and you know it's correct because all the information is there.
Yes.
All the information that's needed to pull those accounts together in one booklet or a a set of accounts or however you want. Mm. You can do that by the press of a button. And this is exactly what we do to businesses. And as part of, you know, that is what we pride ourselves in as a company, because that is where business falls down. That's where errors happen. Yeah. That's where double work happen. Mm. You know, people put timesheets in twice. They put it on this system. Yeah. They put it on that system.
Yeah.
Then John needs to authorize it. Then John needs to pass it to Susie to put it on the system.
And she copies it into a spreadsheet.
And Susie puts it on a spreadsheet so she can import it in the payroll.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
So eliminate those processes, eliminate errors in that, and give people more time to actually look at the business and say, oh, hold on a moment, our workforce are doing this and this and that. This person is taking way too many holidays, way too many sick time off. You know, how can we manage that? So it gives you more the ability to manage the business much better because everything is integrated.
Okay. Let's kind of step through a scenario here. I'm a reasonably small business. I've been going in a couple of years. I've got, I don't know, a payroll of 10 or 12 people or whatever. And I start to implement your system. Is it the kind of system that I can grow it as my business grows so I can bolt on other modules? Or do I have to have the whole thing in one go?
Absolutely not. It's all the systems we deal with is a grow as you go.
Yeah.
I almost want to say.
Yeah.
For one of the systems is modular, so you buy where you start, you add on what you need,
right.
And as you go on, we can integrate that. We can integrate it to other systems that's not part of the family of systems we sell.
Yeah.
So I could, for example, go, you are a company that has a time and attendance machine where people log in with their fingerprints every day. You've got 200 people. Every week, you pull the data from there and give it to someone to put on a payroll system.
Yeah.
I can actually give you a payroll system. I can pull the data from there into my system, and someone just has to go calculate.
Yeah.
And that will calculate the payroll. So it totally eliminates that whole process, and that's what we do. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So it's fully modular.
Modular.
You can use it and go as you grow.
Yeah. As you go along, you add the modules you need.
Mm.
If not, let's say you're a startup, you just need financials to start with. You have a system with financials.
Mm.
You then suddenly have grown to the point where you might have to add some payroll on there. You can add payroll onto the system. You might want to then suddenly have some asset management in there because you're buying a bunch of assets or vehicles for the business.
Yeah.
So you can put that in there. Again, fully integrate that. Then you might have start getting a sales force in, so you might have to get CRM in there because everybody needs to manage in one system. So there's visibility, again, for forecasting what people are doing.
Mm.
So all this totally works together and totally right. Modular system, grow as you go, and then at the end you can totally bolt on what we call a synergy product that really manages everything on top of that, where the management looks at, you know, and managers look at time and attendance for employees, and project management happen and that kind of stuff.
Okay.
So, and as you grow, integrate it along. Yeah,
sweet. And so as a senior management team, can we take a helicopter view of this? So we go, right, okay, well, we don't need to know all the ins and outs because the rest of the people that do the work kind of do that kind of stuff. Can I go, yeah, but I need a report that shows me this and I need a report that shows me that, so I can configure kind of
absolutely
dumb reports for senior management kind of thing?
I don't want to say that's the idea, but that is the idea.
Yeah.
The product will end up, and this is what I meant when I said earlier, on the right information will end up in front of the right people. So the senior management would never be involved with bashing a bunch of transactions in, but they want to see the results of the transactions that has been put in through there. So the senior management would have their area in a dashboard effect that will give them charts, pie charts, reports they can write themselves, for information that pop up.
Mm.
The system will also allow you to have reports delivered via email. So it will pop up and say, here's a report, your sales report, every Monday morning to the sales manager, for example. So it gives you the flexibility to do all those things. And you're absolutely right. Senior management would see what is relevant to them. They wouldn't want to go. They might want to see the top 10 customers and balances and how they are faring, but they wouldn't want to see the information behind that as such. But that's exactly what it does. So it's tailored to each person's level as how they need to work in the system.
Fantastic. And you as an how long have you been going as an organisation?
Oasis has been going since the year 2000, when they were formed as part of a management buyout from another company.
I nearly said, so not long then. And that's just showing my age, because of course that's 18 years.
Absolutely right, yeah.
2000 is just yesterday, basically, for me. whoops. So you've been going 18 years, blimey.
I have been, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
which is really cool. Do you specialise in a particular industry segment?
I feel we specialise in several segments, actually, and it kind of boils down, I suppose, to the people we have in the organisation. Mm. We specialise in the construction industry, so we specialise in bringing construction transactions into the system, giving a back office, and giving these guys the ability to deal with their subcontractors based on the way that HMRC has set out as our rules and regulations for how this needs to be dealt with. Mm. We also specialise in payroll. It's our biggest part of our business, so when payroll time comes, we are very involved with payroll, and nowadays payroll involved everything like the pensions calculation, so we kind of set that up for our customers, and we really have come to grips with all how all those things work. So that's our speciality. Yeah. But when I look at a breakdown of my customers, then I would say manufacturing is our speciality, which I never thought. But when you kind of look at that, it's like, oh, okay, this is what our largest part of our customers is.
Right.
So payroll, manufacturing and construction are the three areas that we excel in.
Sure.
But then in saying that, when I look at the breakdown of my customers, I've got customers in services, which makes up quite a large part. I've got customers in distribution and logistics that make up quite a large part.
Mm.
And that's kind of, that's where our customers lie.
Yeah.
We specialize certainly in the construction side, which is part of why I'm here today, is to kind of pull together people to come to some events that we do.
Yeah, and I wanted to talk about that. So let's move on and talk about that. So that's really interesting. So do check out. We'll give you some contact details at the end of Bruce's piece where you can go and find out more about the products and services that Oasis offer. But let's talk about some of the events you've got coming up, because you do some fantastic events. And I remember last year you did an event at Legoland, didn't you?
We certainly did.
How did that go?
We like keeping it interesting. I mean, it's software is, dare I say, it's such a boring thing.
It's boring, isn't it?
Who gets excited about software?
Yeah.
But software is such a boring thing for most people.
Mm.
And we have to find a way to get in front of people, to get the right in front of the right people, to get the right mix of people there, to get the right information across. It can't be too long, it can't be too short, because you want to keep people's attention. You don't want them walking away thinking, well, this is too much for me. So it's very difficult finding the right venue. So think places like Legoland attracts what we do. But we've set up now, and this came along after the Kent Vision Live we were at. We exhibited at the Kent Vision Live, and I hosted one of the roundtable sessions, a roundtable session where we discussed integration in business and really discussed, you know, what is integration, and when we talk about integration, do people understand what it is?
Yeah.
You know, do they understand that if I talk about proper integration, I mean you can take a picture of your expense and it filters into your accounting system. You know, I don't mean to fill a form in and someone does that for me. So people don't always, everyone has a different idea, of what it is. So that was our discussion. But these roundtable sessions are really kind of, I got my teeth into, and I really loved how they work. So we set out a series of roundtable sessions, which we're hosting now at our offices on the first Tuesday of every month. Very short sessions, 9:30 to 11:00, some coffee, some biscuits, and we sit down and we have a session, but the session is problem-based, which kind of links in with what one of our phone guests talked about earlier. It's solving someone's issue. So I want to get people together. We talk about the problems we have. Now, our first roundtable session, I think, is quite an interesting one. And I just want to read you the write-up we had written for it, because I find it quite interesting. It's monitoring and managing employee absenteeism during the summer.
Right.
So how do we deal with this? Summer has arrived, and it's that time of year when unplanned absence may increase among your employees. Whilst the majority of staff illness will genuine popular sporting events such as the World Cup starting. And Wimbledon, combined with the good weather and the start of the school holidays, could encourage some employees to pull a sickie in commas.
Absolutely.
So we are going to talk about how do business manage absenteeism in the workplace.
Right.
If I have a workforce of 300 people, for example, bearing in mind people have 20 to 25 days of holiday a year. Everybody can't just go, I'm on holiday tomorrow for 2 weeks. People have to apply for it, have to get it authorized, etc. If I have a workforce of 300 people, it means from each person in my exact organization, I am going to get at least 2 emails in a year for employee for holiday.
Because in a bigger organisation with a lot of people, it's not just losing the person that's on leave, is it?
No.
I've been there before in big organisations where you go, oh, right, I need to get the details from Bird, and they go, she's on holiday for 2 weeks. And you go, well, what do I do? Well, you wait for it to come back. So it's not just her productivity, it's my productivity and the further productivity down the line that's being impacted because someone's on leave.
And, absolutely.
And if they're on leave that they've planned, at least they should have been able to plan some things that go, you know, if you need to access to my stuff, it's in the safe. Yeah. But if it's unplanned leave, you're out of water.
Totally messed up. Yeah. I mean, the problem with leave is that people... When you have a huge workforce and you have 300 people wanting holiday, most people want holiday plus minus at the same time. How do you manage that?
Yeah.
You know, imagine getting 300 emails and 150 of them is people want holiday over Christmas time.
Yeah.
I don't close over Christmas. I have to make sure all teams are still people in working. I have to do all of this manually. Now, where we are going with this is obviously you could integrate this. You could get the guys to say, oh, actually, I want these days holiday on an iPad or a phone or whatever. It filters through to a manager. Manager sees that in a grid view. He's like, oh, yeah, everybody can't have holiday here. So we'll have a point scoring system who can and cannot have holiday over a period of time because of, you know, whatever conditions I have set. And that filters through to the system and just back into the system at the end. And if then someone is looking for a person, you would know that person is on holiday and there would be a person superseding them who you could go to. And that's the beauty of an integrated system. And that's where it falls down.
It's really interesting. I was smiling my head off while you were saying that. And the reason I was doing it is, I'm showing my age again on here. But back in the day, when I first left school, I worked in a factory. And what we had was what a lot of factories did then. The holidays were 2 weeks in August when the entire factory shut. Yeah, and everybody was sent on holiday for 2 weeks. So you all had the same 2 weeks because it was the only way they could manage it. And also shutting the factory and starting it up was difficult. So, but you can't do that anymore. You the way that life is now, you just couldn't possibly do that anymore.
No, that just doesn't work anymore.
No, it doesn't.
People need their flexibility.
Exactly.
At the same time, we've evolved and we also want our time to be our time.
Yeah. But as you say, the management of that is incredibly complex. Yeah.
Very difficult. If you've got a large number of employees on your books, that becomes a nightmare to manage. You know, if you've got manufacturing teams that you have to ensure there's always someone on the shop floor or customer service teams or something like that, it's a real nightmare to ensure there's always someone available in those departments. You know, and how do you manage that if you have to do that manually?
Absolutely.
You know, most systems can record when people take holiday, and I'm not disputing that, but it still means someone has to go in and put it on.
Yeah.
And what we are kind of going with this whole idea of an integrated system and where I want to take this talk on the round session table about is, you know, do you know that you could actually get your employees to go onto a portal on any device and apply for the holiday? It gets approved. They can see their payslip. They can do their absentee. They can look at their details. They can alter their next of kin. They can see all of that information. And it doesn't, you know, it doesn't break the bank, firstly, and it gives you so much more time to manage your employees.
Absolutely.
And, you know, that's just going to be our first roundtable session.
Based on what you just said there as well, if I was an employee in that circumstance, I'd appreciate that. I can see the records you got. I can see what you hold on me. I can see what I'm doing too. And that gives me a greater feeling of comfort that you're allowing me to access what you know about me.
It's just transparency, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
I also call it the Amazon effect. You know, you said earlier on about the person who thought 6 months was a long time. And, you know, my assumption would be this probably kind of a younger person that would think that, because they totally have the Amazon effect, the young people. They grew up on mobile phones. And in my opinion, everything has to be instant. And that I call it the Amazon effect because you can go on Amazon at 4 o'clock and get something delivered tomorrow.
Absolutely.
It's quick. So everybody expects, you know, that to happen. And nowadays, for a youngster, you know, the thought, for example, of going to uni for 4 years to learn something that's a lifetime. Four years is a lifetime.
I can Google it. It won't take me that long.
I can Google it. Why do I need to learn?
Yeah, exactly.
And I think it's admirable, but I also think we need to teach patience as well.
Yeah,
so I'm saying, yes, go fast, but go slow.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So there's no right nor wrong, actually.
No.
We're kind of fast running out of time. So, Bruce, when's your roundtable taking place?
My roundtable session is the first Tuesday of every month at the Oasis office, which you'll find on our website.
Which is?
www.
Which is?
World Wide Web.
.o-a-sys.co.uk.
And the link to that website is on the Business Radio website, and it will always be on the Business Radio website if you want to find it. Yep, sorry, Bruce.
That's it, and it's just 9:30 till 11 o'clock for a discussion around the table talking about employee absenteeism, and that would be every month, first Tuesday of every month. We'll have a new subject going forward every month. We'll be talking payroll, we'll be talking CIS, we'll be talking project management, we'll be talking manual entry.
Fantastic. So, Bruce, thank you so much. That sounds really cool. Get along to that. Do check out the website. By going into the website, you can not only see the roundtable, but you can see all the other work and the products that that Oasis sell and support. Bruce, as always, lovely to see you. Thank you so much for that. Been a pleasure to talk to you. Mr. Bruce Kidd of Oasis, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
We're kind of at the end of the show now.
We've gone too quick, huh?
I know.
Can I just say, Bruce, what you've done is amazing. And I'll tell you why, because you've gone and tested something, you've seen something, you've thought, do you know what, I'm going to try that in my business. We don't know if it's going to work. You're just trying it out. And actually, so much is going to come from it. We talked about this last week, didn't we, Paul?
We did, yeah.
And we've literally got the same idea that we're going to do, you know, so it's such a good little thing to... And just keep testing. Just, I say to people, just keep testing it. Who knows?
Yeah. The fact that people like to talk about the issues they have is perfect.
And you've got a problem. Everybody's got that same problem in something. Yeah, I love it. So well done.
Excellent. I've just got a couple of things to finish up on. The Kenwood Trust is one of the Vicar's Picnic's named charities this year. With that, and the Vicar's Picnic is a festival, basically. Have you heard of the Vicar's Picnic?
No.
It's a festival that takes place every year. Kenwood
festival
Trust.
Festival and Vicar shouldn't be in the same sentence. I'm sorry.
With you want to see some of the acts that are on here. Yeah, I'm not going to name all of them, but the headline acts are Star Sailor and Fun Loving Criminals.
Shut the front door.
Yeah.
I love Star Sailor so much.
And Fun Loving Criminals and a whole
hunk. When are we going?
It's, I don't know when it is. It's not listed here. Anyway, it's soon. It's in July and it's in Yalding. Yeah. And if you go to vicarspicnic.co.uk, you can find out all about it and book your tickets.
I love it.
Yeah. And some of the proceeds are going to Kenwood Trust because it's one of their nominated charities. Mm-hmm. So it's the Vicar's Picnic. It's a great lineup of bands and stuff. So do check that out. I also need to tell you about the future of digital marketing. It's a free event staged with Google and their partner, Marketing AM. And the event is on the 10th of July at Fruitworks in Canterbury. And there's an exclusive live stream for Google partners and AM Marketing. It's free to go. It's on the 10th of July from 4:30 until 6:30 at Fruitworks in Canterbury. And the details are at partnersevents.withgoogle.com/AM Marketing. Let me give you that again. partnersevents.withgoogle.com/AM Marketing. And that's the 10th of July at Fruitworks.
Excellent. Fruitworks wanted a shout out as well. So there you go. Shout out for Fruitworks in Canterbury.
Fantastic. There's also coming up later in the year, the Southeast Property Expo, which is taking place at the Hot Farm Paddock Wood. And that's on Thursday, the 11th of October. And the website is sepropertyexpo.co.uk.
Cool.
And we're kind of at the end of another show. I want to say a huge thank you to our show guest today, Mr. Bruce Kidd of Oasis. Bryony Thomas of
Watertight Marketing.
My mind went blank there.
Watertight Marketing.
I saw a picture of the bucket and I wanted to call it Bucket Marketing. I thought, no, that's totally wrong. It's Watertight Marketing, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
Watertight Marketing.
Yeah.
She talks about watertight business.
And if you think that was bad, I've also now got to remember Mr. Adam.
Please say it.
Papaphilippopoulos.
You're amazing. Yeah. You're really good at these names.
Yeah.
Where's he from?
Oh, stop it. You're making me giggle now.
Come on, you got to wrap the show up.
Yeah,
now.
No, he's from Reluctantly Brave.
Of course he is.
He's from Reluctantly
Brave.
Great
name, Brave. We love it.
Yeah, and you'll be able to hear Adam at the... Kent Business
Adamu?
School. Stop it. You're just
Come
doing
on.
It deliberately
it's
now.
Brilliant.
I've done it.
You've done so well.
Yeah, you'll be able to hear Adam Papaphilippopoulos.
It's brilliant.
At the soundbite event with the Turner Contemporary on the 11th of July and the Kent Business School. So thank you to all of you folks for joining in the show. Thank you for all those that tweeted and emailed and who listened in. We'll be back next week with another show. So thank you for joining us. I feel that messages come up. Hold on. I feel I need to tell you something else, but I don't think there is. I can't think of anything. I think we've said hello to everybody and goodbye to everybody.
And yeah. So we've had a great show.
We have indeed. It's been an interesting show. I've been in a bit of a 2-8 myself here.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah, I'll calm down now now that my grandson's born and Albert. And I'm going to spend some quality time with Albert.
All the luck.
Yeah, thank you. So thank you for listening to the Business Bunker Show. We'll be back with you next week. Oh, I knew there was something else I needed to tell you. Of course I did.
Quick.
It's the Business Bunker Extra Show this Friday with Amanda and her co-host, Gemma Fairclough-Haynes, and their guest is Matt Bevan from the Dining Room Club. So 11 o'clock on Friday.
Thank
do tune in.
You got that in.
Yeah, I did. I just got it in time.
You forgot the anniversary. You can't forget the show.
Yeah. I'd have been killed. Yep. So that's the Business Bunker Extra Show, 11 o'clock this Friday. We'll be back next week. Bye
Much
for now.
Love. Bye.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Channel 2.